Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
All right, I wanted to start today's episode by just making you aware that I'm going to be away on vacation next week. Well, actually, the truth is I'm away on vacation right now. This episode is pre-recorded, and so are the episodes that you'll hear Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. After those pre-recorded episodes, I'll be back, but I'll be recording episodes then for the next week. So anyway, from the 11th to the 17th, I believe is the plan right now, there will not be any episodes that week. This is already kind of a weird time of year. I know with Thanksgiving, I missed a couple of days. I will likely also miss a couple days for Christmas. And then I'm going to be gone again in March. Besides those dates, I'm going to do everything I can to keep as consistent as possible. Because this episode is pre-recorded, that means that some of the information from this is from last week and may not contain anything that has happened over the course of the last few days. So with that, let's jump into the news of last week regarding the Trump administration and the fight against fascism. Okay, kicking off this week, I'm going to read a little bit from an article slash video from MSNBC Weekend. I guess they call it MS now, which is a terrible name. There's two parts to this. So this is the former Trump lawyer, Ty Cobb. You may recognize him. He's got a really cool mustache. But he says that the Constitution is not adequate to deal with a president as evil as Trump. And it brings about all the questions regarding the Constitution and the checks and balances that have been put into place to try and prevent this sort of dictatorial ruling that we're trying to see come from the Trump administration. Cobbs here says that he thinks that the Constitution isn't adequate to deal with someone as evil as Trump. Was there some naivety in the way that the Constitution was put together and the way that our checks and balances work? Or is it simply, and this seems to be the more general consensus, that it's not just Trump? The issue is that we have a Supreme Court, we have Congress, we have millions of Americans who voted for this and want this as well. And so it's not necessarily just one man and that the Constitution can't handle it. The problem is that we are seeing a breakdown of democracy because of a wider effort and basically the capitulation of the members of those checks and balances to the President of the United States and the executive branch. This same article also talks about this. Trump faced mounting losses this week in court on numerous fronts, both personal and presidential. An appeals court rejected Trump's efforts to revive his defamation suit against CNN. A federal judge ruled against his deployment of National Guard troops to Washington, D.C., and another judge ruled he likely violated the law when trying to cut millions in funding to local governments, unless they followed conditions related to immigration enforcement. And so these two things that I've just mentioned, what Ty Cobb said here, as well as the fact that Trump is also losing on the legal front in many of his battles, it begs this question, right? It's this ongoing divergence of future scenarios where either the legal system prevails, it hobbles along long enough for us to get rid of Trump and hopefully all of the sort of cancerous GOP ideology that's seeking to destroy democracy, or Ty Cobb is right and the Constitution is not adequate to deal with this current threat. We'll talk both about some of the wins and some of the losses in the fight against Trump in today's episode. The International Business Times and many other sources reported this week about how the White House scraps DOGE. It says the Department of Government Efficiency created to slash federal costs is shut down after failing to deliver savings and raising questions about wasteful contracts and media subscriptions. DOGE was supposed to run for another 8 months, We saw how earlier this year, around March or so, Elon Musk sort of exited the scene after hits came to his business and to his personal brand. Doge has overall been quiet since then and is now officially being shut down much earlier than proposed. The endeavor was, you know, supposed to cut tons of expenses and save tons of money for the American people. None of that materialized. Instead, it seems that we had the biggest heist of personal data or data breaches in history, as Elon Musk was given access to unprecedented amounts of citizen data. It's unknown at this point what access to that information he either still has or was able to take away, or what he will do with it. In the Daily Beast, there's an article titled DOJ Staff Rip Trump and Bondi's Irreversible Damage in Tell-All Farewell Notes. Essentially, there is a large amount of staff that were either fired, forced to resign, or decided to quit, and are sort of telling what's going on inside of the Department of Justice. It says, unhappy staff are, quote, being asked to put loyalty to the president over the Constitution. I'll read a little bit of this article. A wave of former Justice Department employees is reportedly leaving behind more than just empty seats, revealing a glimpse of life inside the Trump administration. Farewell letters paint a portrait of an agency appearing to buckle under President Donald Trump's second-term demands, with some insiders warning of potentially irreversible damage, according to Axios. The Justice Connection, a network of DOJ and FBI alumni, have been collecting the notes from those who have walked out. Contributors describe collapsing ethics, corrosive pressure, and a toxic workplace. Executive Director Stacey Young said in a statement that staff are being asked to put loyalty to the president over the Constitution, the rule of law, and their professional ethical obligations. Carrie A. Syme, a former trial attorney, wrote in a March farewell that the current incarnation of the department defines justice in a way that I do not recognize. She pleaded with the remaining staff to remember that the vast majority of DOJ attorneys are people of goodwill who are trying to maintain a true sense of justice. For some, the concerns are more immediate. Devin Flanagan, formerly a trial attorney in the Wildlife and Marine Resources section, warned that the damage will only accelerate as more employees find these stressful and demeaning conditions untenable. Three assistant United States attorneys who refused to dismiss New York Mayor Eric Adams' case put their objections in writing before they walked. In their April letter to Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, they said the department had decided that obedience supersedes all else. The push to drop the charges sparked a broader internal revolt. There is no greater privilege than to work for an institution whose mandate is to do the right thing, the right way, for the right reasons, they wrote. We will not abandon this principle to keep our jobs. Others say they didn't even have the choice to resign. Anam Rahman Petit, an immigration judge who said she was terminated without explanation, called the staffing changes a systemic effort to reshape the bench with individuals more likely to deny cases without regard for due process. It ends by saying, and for some, the problem isn't ideology, it's incompetence. Trial attorney Barbara Schwabauer, who resigned in August, wrote that her departure wasn't due to a deep state refusal to work with this administration. Instead, she blamed hollow leadership that disregards longstanding interpretations of civil rights law, upends division and departmental norms, and values perceived loyalty above the meritocratic principles it claims to espouse. So there's so much to say about this, but I think I'll just kind of note that there's a clear hollowing out of those who seek true justice, who want to practice the law with integrity, being replaced by those who are simply loyal to Donald Trump. And in many cases, this means that they are not qualified to be there. This hollowing out reminds me much of Idiocracy and this sort of idea that blind allegiance, being the replacement for qualification and ability, is going to lead to sort of the stupidification, if that's a word I can use here. Kind of ironic, I know. Maybe enstupification. Of the of the country and of these institutions that typically keep things running smoothly. It's corruption. And this type of corruption specifically is a wonderful example of catabolic collapse, as it will cause these institutions and other institutions in a domino effect to fall in on themselves. We'll talk later on in this episode about a specific instance in which the unqualified nature of these people is causing a headache for Donald Trump. CNN says that DOJ acknowledges Kristi Noem made decision to continue deportation flights to El Salvador despite judges' orders. It's another example of the Trump administration blatantly going against judges' orders. And in this case, the Department of Justice specifically acknowledging that Kristi Noem made the decision herself to continue despite the orders to stop. The DOJ, according to the article, acknowledged in the filing that it was Noam who made the call in March to keep the planes headed to Secaucus prison after U.S. District Judge James Boasberg last week resumed his criminal contempt inquiry to find out which Trump administration officials were responsible for flouting his orders. The Justice Department argued in the filing that decision was lawful and was consistent with a reasonable interpretation of the court's orders. This is another theme of today's episode that we'll touch back on, that essentially, court is saying something is illegal, and Trump's administration simply responds, no, it is legal. They're not saying it's illegal and we don't care. They're saying you don't have the power to say whether it's legal or not. We declare if it's legal or not, which is obviously completely incorrect. That's the whole purpose of the justice system, of the legislative branch, is to determine what is and isn't legal, and it is those judges who make that ultimate decision. Well, speaking about the legislative branch, the Supreme Court blocks order that found Texas congressional map is likely racially biased. That's kind of a confusing way to word that heading, but it refers back to what we talked about 2 weeks ago. It was in kind of the win section at that time that the judges had said Texas's gerrymandering of their congressional map was illegal and that they could not do it the way that they did it. That was a win at the time. Well, now the Supreme Court is blocking that and saying that no, actually, it's fine, at least for the time being. They put sort of a stay on it. They say they're going to look into it further. This is exactly what we said would happen in that episode, that it was going to be appealed and that they're going to look into it. They'll probably take too long of a time to do it and say in the end, oh, we'll come up with a final decision after the midterms so as to sort of allow it to play out as is. We'll have to pay attention to that one as time goes on to see if that is how it plays out. In another win for Trump, the Georgia prosecutor kills the historic election interference case against Trump and allies. This is a case that has been going on for years now. It was brought against Trump by Fannie Willis. She's a district attorney in Fulton County, Georgia. It was essentially based on the phone call that Trump had made to Kemp in Georgia, stating that he needed a certain amount of votes and he needed Kemp to find those votes for him. He was essentially telling the governor of Georgia, I need to win Georgia and you need to find me these votes. This was a racketeering case, which seems like one that should have been pretty open and shut based on the evidence. And yet, Peter Scandalakis, the prosecutor on the case, who is a Republican, by the way, threw it out. He said, given the complexity of the legal issues at hand, ranging from constitutional questions and the Supreme Clause to immunity, jurisdiction, venue, speedy trial concerns, and access to federal records, and even assuming each of these issues were resolved in the state's favor, bringing this case before a jury in 2029, 2030, or even 2031 would be nothing short of a remarkable feat. So basically he said, this is too hard, it's going to take too long, and so we're just going to let Trump get away with this. If that's not corruption, I'm not sure what is. More information has come out about the FBI's review and redaction of the Epstein files. Nearly $1 million was spent just on overtime pay for FBI workers to redact and remove Donald Trump's name from the files. I do not understand how this is not, I mean, it's a huge story and everyone's talking about it, and it makes it blatantly and obviously clear that Donald Trump is all over those files. And if he was in those files in an innocent way, there would be no need to redact his name. So how is this not just clear proof? And how is it okay for the FBI to do this? I get that we don't have a lot of legal leverage, I guess, at this time against Donald Trump. Who's going to try him? How long would it take? You know, we just seen this last one get thrown out with irrefutable evidence, but this is just so blatant. It's disgusting. This is from Bloomberg. It says the communications released to FOIA files provide a look behind the scenes as agents and other FBI personnel started to work on the Epstein files earlier this year. I'm going to read just a few paragraphs from this one as well. It says the legacy of disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein continues to hang over national politics. Earlier this month, President Donald Trump signed legislation that required the Justice Department to release the Epstein files. Soon, the public may finally get to see at least some of what the government has in its voluminous cache, which comprises more than 300 gigabytes of data and physical evidence from its criminal probe of the serial sex abuser. Getting to this point has been quite a winding path that started just after Trump took office, and that FOIA Files has been covering. It says, as I reported in March, after a botched rollout of what Attorney General Pam Bondi described as phase one of the release of the Epstein files, FBI Director Kash Patel ordered around 1,000 FBI special agents to team up with the Bureau's FOIA personnel at an FBI facility in Winchester, Virginia, to prepare the Epstein files for public release. The army of agents from the New York and Washington field offices, along with FOIA officers, were instructed on how to review and apply redactions to the documents. Just this morning, I got the partially redacted records from the FBI. They mostly consist of emails that provide a look behind the scenes as agents and other FBI personnel started to work on the documents. The Bureau withheld more than 161 pages, citing ongoing law enforcement proceedings and other FOIA exemptions. The emails reveal the special training given to FBI personnel working on what it called the Epstein Transparency Project. In some instances, they referred to it as the Special Redaction Project. The training entailed PowerPoint slide presentations and video instructions on how to review the files. The records I got also reveal the number of hours the FBI devoted to the project, which required some agents to work nights and weekends. The FBI paid personnel from various divisions, including counterintelligence and international operations, $851,344 in overtime for working on the Epstein files between March 17th and March 22nd. So just 1 week, it was nearly $1 million in overtime. FBI personnel clocked in a total of 4,737 hours of overtime between January and July. Of that, more than 70% occurred during the month of March while personnel reviewed the Epstein files. So while Trump has signed to release the Epstein files, we're now a couple of weeks into his time. He should have to have it released in the next week or two. The amount of faith that I have that it's not just going to be a bunch of black lines or that it will reveal anything about anyone other than targeted Democrats, I just don't have much faith in that. Okay, more actions from the Trump administration. I'll go through these a little bit faster. Trump guts federal protections for whistleblowers. Donald Trump is about to make it a lot harder for whistleblowers to come forward. I'll link the article here so you can read through it. I think it pretty much explains, in the headline there what you can expect. And of course, why Donald Trump would want whistleblowers to stay silenced. Trump cancels release of crucial economic report to hide his failures. Donald Trump has now blocked 3 economic data reports. So this refers back to something we've talked about multiple times, and he's continuing to do it and accelerating the amount that he's holding back. Essentially, instead of releasing reports that show economic data, which would admit to his failures, which would admit to the world and to the country, and probably put the stock market into turmoil, that things are not going well on the economic front. He continues to send out tweets, making claims that prices are lower than they've ever been, making claims that he has brought prices down from the Biden administration by absurd percentages. Meanwhile, reality shows the opposite. And there's no way to really show any of it from a data perspective because all of the normal data points that are used come from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, which is where he is canceling these reports from. Trump also vows to freeze migration from third world countries this week after the DC attack on National Guard. So this is brand new as of the time that I'm recording this. The National Guard attack was a few days ago as of the time of recording this. And he has now essentially announced that we're going to end federal benefits for non-citizens. He says that he plans to denaturalize migrants, undermining domestic tranquility. And he calls for a reverse migration to reduce illegal population. So obviously he was already headed in this direction. We've seen so much of what ICE is doing. He had talked recently about removing the safe haven status from many of like the Venezuelan immigrants. Now he's doing the same thing with these Afghanistan immigrants, and he is likely going to continue to roll this out wider and wider. It's fascinating how he continues to wonder why the economy is struggling when he is removing so many of the people that do crucial work inside of the U.S. Obviously, that's just one of the issues facing the economy, but it is a major one. All right, a couple of maybe potential wins this week. I always put a caveat on it. I always say wins with a question mark because just like the Texas rollback of their gerrymandering congressional maps was a win, we're seeing it kind of get wound back now. And you never have a true win until all is said and done. But that said, federal judge dismisses indictments against Letitia James and James Comey, saying Lindsey Halligan appointment was unlawful. So there was a lot that went into this case. We talked about how Donald Trump unlawfully demanded that Pam Bondi, his attorney general, prosecute his political enemies. And in this case, it was both James Comey and Letitia James. There were all sorts of missteps in this. In the last Friday episode, I named a couple of those missteps. Turns out, in the end, it wasn't those exact missteps that caused this to be thrown out, but rather that the indictment had to be dismissed because Lindsay Halligan, who was Trump's appointee, it was unlawful for her to have been appointed at all. This goes back to what I had mentioned earlier about the Department of Justice and the sort of stupefaction of it. Lindsay Halligan is loyal to Donald Trump, yet she had never tried a federal case in her career. All right, now there's one more topic here, but I have multiple articles about this topic. This is in regard to the Democrats in Congress who made this video stating that military members should not obey any unlawful orders. Maybe you've seen the video by now. It's brief. It's several Democratic senators taking turns, making statements, pleading with military members to, if they receive illegal orders, to not obey them, that it is something that they agreed to as part of their oath. There is one moment in the video where they state that Donald Trump is trying to pit the military against American citizens. Now, the right very harshly react to this. Donald Trump specifically tweeted, retweeted, spoke out in interviews, saying things like they should be arrested for sedition and going so far as to say that that is punishable by death, and retweeting somebody who said that they should be hanged. Pete Hegseth and others on the right have continued with this rhetoric, calling for their arrest. Others like Laura Loomer calling for their execution, etc., etc. Pete Hegseth has talked about how he intends to potentially court-martial Mark Kelly. He is the main one here that is really being investigated and looked into because of his military experience. The Pentagon launches a thorough review into Democratic Senator Mark Kelly over video to troops. Quote, "I've given too much to this country to be silenced by bullies," Kelly said. So Kelly will not stand down, but it seems that neither may the Pentagon and Pete Hegseth. I personally think they're going to have a really hard time finding something that he actually did that was illegal here. It is literally in their oath to not obey illegal orders. How they're going to find sedition in this, I'm not sure. That said, this does not go through the regular route for decision-making for a trial. This is internal, inside of the military, inside of the Department of Defense. If that military court system has already been filled with Trump sympathizers, it could spell trouble for Kelly. And I need to do more to learn more about what that process looks like, how that trial would go, what the potential consequences are. But we'll find out more in the coming weeks and months. On that topic, I had mentioned earlier how the Trump administration simply declares that what they're doing is legal when courts say otherwise. In this case, specifically in regards to National Guard troops in U.S. cities, courts have declared that illegal in so many cases. And yet, the White House here declares all of Trump's orders to military are legal. They're attempting to make a blanket statement saying that if Trump says it to the military, it is legal. There is no illegal order. Basically saying that all military personnel are required to obey Trump no matter what it is that he says. Folks, if that is not a dictatorial, authoritarian, Hitler-esque approach to addressing the military, to skirting the law, to managing dissent, then I don't know what is. I've said over the last couple of weeks that I feel like we're at a convergence point. We're at a point where either the law clamps down and stops Donald Trump in his tracks, slows his momentum enough, or we're at a point where Donald Trump has to go just full on pure dictator in order to get things done. And in this moment, we can see that he's attempting the dictator approach. He is, in some cases, completely skirting, Supreme Court orders or other judges' orders. And I think we'll find out in short order whether or not the law can do anything to stop him. The next big potential roadblock for him is midterms coming up in now less than a year's time. The clock is ticking down on that. We're close to 11 months until those come about. Will they be held? Will they be held fairly? If they are held, will he succeed? Will he win those midterms? Will he lose them? If he loses them, will he accept it? will the new senators or members of the House be sworn in, or will he find a way to skirt around it? If he loses, will he have to make it at that point so that Congress doesn't matter? Will he work to make it so that he can do everything he needs to do without Congress? And will he succeed in that? I don't know. There's so many questions. It's certainly what he's attempting to do. It will cause him a lot less heartache if he can win in those midterms, or at least appear to win, whether he cheated or not, so that he can continue to operate under the facade of status quo, right? Under the idea of still listening to Congress and doing it the right way. But should he lose the midterms, I don't believe he has any intention to even attempt to pretend to do it the right way. And while that, again, will make things harder for him, I don't think that will stop him from trying. All right, we'll continue bringing the news each week as we get closer and closer to those midterms, and as we discover which way the Republic will head. All right, thanks. Have a good weekend. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.